This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Interest rates go sky high in Ukraine. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Ukraine's central bank today more than doubled the country's benchmark interest rate in a bid to keep the currency from devaluing further and to curb the flight of investment capital. At a time when interest rates in Western Europe are running near zero, the key rate in Ukraine went from 7% to 14.5%. This as pro-Russian protesters continue to hold government buildings in eastern Ukraine. Stephen Ennis is a Russian media analyst with BBC Monitoring. Mr. Ennis, good morning.
Good morning, David.
We're seeing some moves from Ukraine today to boost interest rates. It sounds like the economic situation there may be deteriorating.
Well, that's very much the picture being portrayed by Russian television. They're talking about a collapsing currency, rising prices. They're saying that at the behest of the IMF, lots of sort of people working for the government are going to be laid off, and that poor and weak and vulnerable and defenseless Ukrainians will be suffering because of the withdrawal of social services. So certainly Russian media is painting a very bleak economic picture of what's going on in Ukraine at the moment.
Now, this is a view, Mr. Ennis, that Russian authorities would want to reinforce?
Well, they don't recognize the current authorities. They say that they came to power through a bloody coup. They're often described as a junta, either directly by the presenters or through interviews with people in the east of Ukraine, where pro-Russian sentiment seems to be quite strong among certain sections of the population. So their interest really is to discredit the new government in Ukraine. That's partly because they don't want the country to be falling under the influence of the West. They also want to sort of discourage the idea that any kind of revolution or uprising against an autocracy can lead to anything good, because that could obviously have implications for the political situation at home.
Stephen Ennis with BBC Monitoring. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now let's quickly do the numbers. The FT 100 index in London is down 0.2%, but Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are mixed. It is the tax deadline in the United States, and when the envelopes are slipped into the mail, it's often accompanied by a silent prayer about please no audit. But as Dan Bobkoff reports, the IRS says it will audit fewer people this year.
The IRS wants you to know it's tough on tax cheats. It also wants you to know it doesn't have enough money this year to be as tough on tax cheats. Joshua Blank is with NYU's law school.
We hear a lot about people going to prison for tax fraud, but at the same time, the IRS needs budgetary resources.
With a smaller budget and staff, the agency says fewer than 1% of returns will be audited this year. The IRS hopes that number will get a hostile Congress to increase its budget. Economist Joel Slemrod of the University of Michigan says there are consequences to less enforcement,
which in turn hurts everyone else.
Former IRS Acting Commissioner Kevin Brown, now with PricewaterhouseCoopers, says the IRS is also losing the deterrent effects of what happens when someone tells all his friends about his audit.
And here's what they caught me on. They caught me on the home office deduction, or they caught me on something else. I had to write a big check. Geez, I hope you don't ever have to go through that.
The IRS hopes it can simultaneously scare you and scare Congress into giving it more money. I'm Dan Bobkoff from Marketplace.
General Motors CEO Mary Barra is set to speak to an industry conference in New York today amid the investigations, both internal and external, into why GM took so long to recall cars with deadly ignition switches. Barra has just posted a message to customers and employees promising, quote, accountability from our senior leadership when it comes to dealing with future safety problems. Marketplace regular Alan Sloan, senior editor at large at Fortune magazine, has been watching Barra, who's only been on the job since January 15th, try to weather the storm. Hello, Alan.
Good morning, David.
The buck stops at a boss's desk, I suppose, but do you think the focus on Barra may be misdirected?
Right. Well, here's Barra, who became CEO early this year. the stories of what happened or what supposedly happened go back 10 years, maybe more. And I have this list in front of me that I will not bore you with of five CEOs before Barra who might have been responsible for some or all of it, three of whom were appointed by the government. And you don't see them up there in Congress being tortured.
She is the focus of a lot of ire, and we'll see where the facts finally lie. But it appears that federal regulators got early wind of a possible problem with these ignition switches as far back as 2003. And you're saying Mary Barra was not CEO in 2003. She didn't get that position until this year.
Right. And, you know, it's fair enough to hold the CEO responsible. The question is, why are you holding Mary Barra, who until these hearings was a hero because she was the first woman to become CEO of GM. But now suddenly everything is her fault because she happened to be CEO at the wrong time. If the people in Congress had any intestinal fortitude, why don't they call her predecessor, Dan Akerson? Why don't they call some of these other people? Why are they calling her? The answer is it's good television.
Now, your interest in this is what? Accountability for leaders of large organizations?
I'm interested in this part as accountability for leaders of large organizations and also for accountability in Congress and, for that matter, accountability of our business because our business loves show trials. This is a show trial. Barra's being trotted out, villainized. Half the time, they don't even let her say anything. If you're going to torture somebody, at least torture the right person, and I don't think it's her.
Alan Sloan, Senior Editor at Large at Fortune Magazine. Alan, thank you.
My pleasure, David.
And the online site CareerCast has ranked jobs in terms of earnings potential. Top of the list, mathematician. Median pay last year, $101,360. We live in a data-driven economy, and those folks sure know how to crunch numbers. Now, toward the very bottom of CareerCast's list of 200 jobs is broadcaster at number 196. Great. Newspaper reporter at number 199. Lumberjack is listed as the worst job. Hard, dangerous, pays $24,000 a year. What's the line? I'm a lumberjack and I'm not okay. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report on APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.